week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Baseball fans here in the U.S. capital city are celebrating the Washington Nationals and their first ever appearance in the World Series. The Nationals advanced to the championship series by sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals in four consecutive games, as we hear now from the AP's Craig Heist.
The Nationals scored seven times in the first inning, and that propelled them to a 7-4 win over the Cardinals in a four-game sweep of their NLCS series. Yan Gomes and Trey Turner had two-run singles, while Juan Soto, Victor Robles, and Anthony Rendon drove in runs off starter and loser Dakota Hudson. Patrick Corbin gave up four runs over five innings and fanned 12 for the win. Howie Kendrick was named the series MVP.
To see a team like us, you know, continue to grind, and I think the mixture of people that we do have is what makes us so good. The chemistry that we do have, we understand each other. And, you know, I feel like being around this long, I wouldn't change anything about the past, because this is just, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Jose Martinez drove in two for the Cardinals. Yadier Molina homered. Craig Heist, Washington.
Thanks, Craig. Craig mentioned Nationals shortstop Trey Turner knocking in two runs with a single in the first inning. Turner says the fans at Nationals Park have provided the team with a big boost.
It's been special. These fans have been unbelievable the last 2 days, especially. You know, tonight was probably the loudest I've ever been in, a stadium like that. Those fans have been unbelievable, and, it's going to be exciting for those three games at home, and hopefully we can get some wins for them.
A sellout crowd of almost 44,000 attended the series-clinching win at Nationals Park, located just a short walk from our Voice of America headquarters here in Southwest Washington. The Nationals fans cheered for Trey Turner, and they also cheered for first baseman Ryan Zimmerman, who is described as the franchise cornerstone. The 35-year-old Zimmerman was the team's first draft pick after the club moved to Washington in 2005 from Montreal, Canada. Zimmerman leads the Nationals in more than a half dozen statistical categories, including games played, hits, home runs, and runs batted in. Now, Zimmerman has played on some very bad Washington teams, and he's played on some very good Washington teams. This season, the Nationals overcame a very slow start, a record of 19 wins and 31 losses after 50 games, to reach the World Series. Talk to us, Ryan.
You got to catch some breaks, and I think in the years past, maybe we didn't catch those breaks. I think we caught some breaks this year, but I think more importantly, we took advantage of those breaks. So kind of made our own luck, I guess, if that's what how you want to put it.
In the World Series, Ryan Zimmerman and the Washington Nationals will play either the Houston Astros or the New York Yankees. The Astros beat the host Yankees in New York Tuesday, as we hear now from the AP's Tom Merriam.
The Houston Astros have taken a 2-1 lead in the American League Championship Series after a 4-1 victory over the Yankees in Game 3. Gerrit Cole threw seven more shutout innings while allowing just four hits and fanning seven. Cole walked five but stranded nine base runners. Cole has now yielded just one run in 22 2/3 innings this postseason.
As far as the role, I just try to take it one start at a time. Obviously tonight, fastball command was a bit of a struggle, and for some reason it wasn't early in the inning. It was more late in the inning.
Solo homers by Jose Altuve and Josh Reddick in the first and second innings respectively off Luis Severino gave Cole the early offensive support he needed. The Astros scored two more in the seventh to seal the win. Gleyber Torres homered for the Yankees' only run. Tom Merriam, New York.
Thanks, Tom. The Yankees will host the Astros later Wednesday night in New York in Game 4 of the Best of 7 American League Championship Series. Once again, the Astros lead 2-1, and the winner of the Houston-New York Series will play the Washington Nationals in the 115th edition of Major League Baseball's World Series.
Hearty greetings. This is Tony Ibitoye, the media officer of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Super Eagles media officer Toyin Ibitoye says recent draws against Brazil and Ukraine will serve Nigeria well in 2021 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches next month. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Toyin had this to say.
The friendly game against Brazil, even the game against Ukraine before then, were very top quality friendly games. And they really tested the team, and the coaches were happy to see the level of solidarity, the level of discipline, the level of hard work in the players. So those games are very crucial games, and they are very important games. And they have put us in a very good frame of mind for the game against Benin, and of course the game against Lesotho. So in a way, yes, we can say those two games have prepared us, and it's just for us to cross the T's, dot the I's, and correct a few things, consolidate on our areas of strength, and I think we'll be ready for the two games in November.
How would you rate the new players in the Super Eagles, Joe Aribo, Maduka Okoye, and other players that made their debut for Nigeria? Are they good to go against Benin and Lesotho?
Yes, Mike, I think the new players, some of those new players have made a very good impression, and I can tell you that the coaches are happy with what some of them are bringing to the table. Joe Aribo scored against Ukraine, scored against Brazil, has put himself in a very good position to be in the team for the future games. Maduka Okoye came in as a sub and did well against Brazil. So we're happy now. Our team is rich. We have options that can come in for us and make our team a lot more competitive. So these new boys have brought a lot to the table, and we are happy. The team is stronger. The team is fresher. The team is younger, more intensive, and playing better as well. So it's good for us. We are happy.
When will the Super Eagles resume camping for the AFCON doubleheader, or the two matches they have to play against Benin Republic and Lesotho? And do you have any injury fears in the camp before the matches are played?
Yeah, thank you, Mike. The games are taking place in the second week of November. We are looking at November 13, 14 for the game at home to Benin Republic. And 4 days after, we are looking at maybe 17, 18 for the return leg, or even on the 19th for the second game in November against Lesotho. And our camp will open immediately. The FIFA window opens. That will be the weekend before those games are played. So we hope to have all the players in on time, have a few days of training, maybe 2-3 days of training, and then go for the games. But already the coaches are doing a lot of work to ensure that our players are fresh, and we are ready for those two games, because it's important for us to start well the AFCON qualifiers so that we can maintain a good momentum and then finish well.
That's Toyin Ibitoye, the media officer of Nigeria's national football team, the Super Eagles. And Toyin spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. 5 men and 1 woman are vying to be the next president of the Ghana Football Association, which has been mired in a corruption scandal. The election is scheduled for October 25th in the capital, Accra. One of the candidates is Nkoma Mensah, who heads a law firm in Ghana. In an interview with Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori, Nkoma Mensah said he wants to clean up the GFA to attract corporate sponsors.
I have been appalled for a long time with the kind of corruption and intransparent behavior that was being exhibited at the Ghana Football Association. I remember in 2015, I voiced it out till I became the enemy of the federation because they thought I was exposing them. It is important that we welcome the ANAS expose. It's an eye-opener. It has given us a chance for the whole of the populace to wake up to what some of us have been saying in the past. I think it is going to impact this election, because I suspect that the delegates are now going to wake up to their responsibility and say that no more shall we have that kind of rot in Ghana football.
What prompted you to stand for the GFA president?
I was introduced to an orphan who was a very good footballer, and he came to my office and asked me for help. I didn't know there were young people who were in such need, and they had no people to look after them. But upon deciding to go near football, I realized a whole lot of things that were wrong, because the policy makers who are supposed to be there to help these young people were not looking after them, but looking after themselves. One of the pillars of my message to the delegates is that let us build a very transparent FA. And I have told them that the reason we are not attracting any sponsorship to our leagues is that no businessman wants to throw his money after corrupt and intransparent people. So the first thing we're doing is to clean the FA, make it a credible institution so that people will begin to collaborate their brands with so we can do business together. Secondly, I am also totally appalled that we have been receiving monies from FIFA for purposes of building structures for our young people, and that money finds itself somewhere else. It is insensitive. It is an act of injustice to our young people, because for 13, 14 years, I haven't seen one pitch being built by the Ghana Football Association. But I am aware that they receive money yearly for these structures and nothing happens. Three, I think that we must leave a legacy. I think we must see something by way of a legacy project for our young people for the future. We have been to 3 World Cups and come back. There is no legacy for it, nothing to show that we have been there. But we have received enormous amounts of money from our participation in the South African World Cup, for example. And I think it is a shame that we are not doing anything to leave us a legacy for the future generations.
That's Ankoma Mensah, one of the candidates in the Ghana Football Association presidential election scheduled for October 25th. And he spoke with Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori in Accra, Ghana. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest better part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you Wednesday night at 18:30 UTC GMT with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Japanese fans are getting excited about Sunday's Rugby World Cup quarterfinal against South Africa in Tokyo. And merchandise is in high demand, as we hear now from VOA's Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Hey, sports fans, if you tuned in on Tuesday, you heard Sonny kick things off with a preview of Sunday's quarterfinal match between Japan and South Africa. And with the host team reaching the tournament's quarterfinals for the first time, Japanese fans are flocking to a Tokyo megastore with the hope of snagging a Brave Blossoms jersey. Danny Robinson is manager of the Japan 2019 Rugby World Cup Shinjuku Megastore, and he says the demand for official merchandise far outweighs the supply.
The demand for all items has been really good, especially the Japanese jerseys. The Japanese jerseys are just selling like crazy. I mean, we've taken them from the stadiums. What hasn't sold at the stadiums coming back here. We have totally cleaned out Canterbury's warehouse, and we're getting them wherever we can. But unfortunately, it looks like most of the Japanese jerseys in Japan are sold out.
In fact, World Rugby reports more than 200,000 jerseys have been sold so far, and Japanese fans from far and wide are spending an average of $120 on memorabilia. But Danny Robinson says it's going fast.
If we get a shipment in, we'll have maybe 200 on the shelf, and suddenly they're gone within like 2 hours, 3 hours maximum. you know, we'll maybe we'll replenish the next day with a smaller shipment as fast as we can. We'll get 30 or 40. And then after that, maybe 30 or 40 minutes, they're just gone. We have people lining up at the door when they know Japanese jerseys are here.
Well, those eager fans have a lot to celebrate at this year's tournament. Japan has won all four of their matches in Pool A. And with their victories over Ireland and Scotland, the host team has finished at the top of their group. They are now set to face South Africa, who are no doubt ready to end the host team's fairy tale run and change a little history as well. At their last World Cup meeting in 2015, Japan caused what has been dubbed the greatest shock in rugby history when they stunned the two-time champions in a 34-32 upset in the pool stages. This time, South African scrum half Herschel Yonke says his team will have to neutralize Japan's fast pace in order to stay in control.
Japan does play a fast brand of rugby. I think it's important for us not to lose our cool and just to keep sticking to what we do and what we do best and try to control it and hopefully we can nullify their pace and then hopefully it will turn out a good day for us.
South Africa advances to the quarterfinals in second place in Pool B. Their match against Japan follows a quarterfinal opener between Wales, the leader in Pool B, and France, who finished in second place in Pool C. On Saturday, quarterfinal action will begin with Pool C leader England against Pool D runners-up Australia. That match is followed by Pool A runners-up Ireland against New Zealand, who finished at the top of the standings in Pool B. We will bring you results from the 2019 Rugby World Cup tournament as we inch closer and closer to the final match on November 2nd. And that is all from me for now. Sonny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Sporting greetings. This is Bronson Weir, the head coach of the Nigerian national men's rugby team. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
October 30th marks the 45th anniversary of the Rumble in the Jungle, the epic world heavyweight title fight between the then champion George Foreman and the legendary challenger, the late Muhammad Ali. The spectacle in Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been called one of the greatest sporting events of the 20th century. Ali won by knockout, putting Foreman down just before the end of the eighth round. One of the people who traveled with Muhammad Ali to Kinshasa was former world heavyweight champion Larry Holmes. Holmes was Ali's main sparring partner between 1971 and 1975, and he helped Ali get ready for Foreman. My VOA colleague Shaka Sali had a chance to talk with Holmes about the Rumble in the Jungle after Ali's death in 2016. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to their conversation. Here's Shaka.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rumble in the Jungle.
In the Jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali at the Rumble in the Jungle in Zaire. And he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye.
Ali killed him.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Dumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Dumaye. You know, we said the same thing. Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye. And it was neat. And people, everywhere you go, people love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car. Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. This is what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxer, but you know, but George Foreman they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali. Everywhere Ali go, people go with him, but George, they didn't do that with George. That's okay, because I didn't like George either.
I see. Have you been to Africa, Lale, since 1974?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been to different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been to different parts.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes. And Larry was talking with my VOA colleague, Shaka Sali. And that interview originally aired on our Straight Talk Africa show in 2016. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. More football news now. In Spain on Wednesday, Barcelona and Argentina star Lionel Messi won his sixth European Golden Shoe Award, given to Europe's top scorer for the 2018-2019 season. Messi scored 36 goals during the campaign, three more than second place Kylian Mbappe of Paris Saint-Germain. It's just the latest award in a star-studded career for 32-year-old Lionel Messi. Last month in Milan, Italy, Messi won the best FIFA Men's Player Trophy for 2019. The International Olympic Committee announced Wednesday that the marathon and race walking events during the 2020 Games in Japan will be moved to the northernmost island of Hokkaido from originally planned courses in the capital, Tokyo, because of concerns about heat. IOC President Thomas Bach said, and I quote, "Athletes' health and well-being are always at the heart of our concerns. The Olympic Games are the platform where athletes can give once-in-a-lifetime performances, and these measures ensure they have the conditions to give their best." Organizers have been looking for ways to protect athletes and spectators from Tokyo's sweltering temperatures expected during next year's Olympics and Paralympic Games. Tokyo held a test marathon last month featuring tents equipped with mist machines for spectators. Officials had also been planning to hold longer distance races during cooler hours, but questions had persisted over whether such steps were enough. There was severe humidity and high temperatures at the recent World Championships marathon in Doha, even with a midnight start. In the women's marathon, nearly one-third of the 70 starters did not finish. Kenyan athletes Eliud Kipchoge and Bridget Koske, who set marathon records over the weekend, are among the nominees for the IAAF's Male and Female World Athlete of the Year 2019 awards. Running in a special race in Vienna with pacemakers and other course help, Kipchoge became the first person to break 2 hours in the marathon, clocking 1 hour, 59 minutes, and 40 seconds. And Koske set a new women's marathon record in Chicago, where she had a time of 2 hours, 14 minutes, and 4 seconds. Two more Kenyan athletes, Beatrice Chepkoech and Helen Obiri, are also among the 11 nominees for the Female World Athlete of the Year award. And that wraps up the October 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to producer Nadia Taha. Thanks also to VOA engineer Rob McLean. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
This is Science in a Minute. Piranhas are carnivorous fish that have razor-sharp teeth. They can be found in the Amazon River Basin area of South America and are well known for their feeding frenzies that churn the water so fiercely it appears to be boiling. Piranhas attack with such viciousness that they are able to strip all the flesh of an animal within a matter of minutes. Researchers led by the University of Washington has confirmed previous findings that piranhas always have a ready supply of those razor-sharp teeth. The researchers found that the fish have two sets of interlocking teeth, one for each side of their face. When one tooth is lost or becomes worn throughout their lives, all the teeth in the set are immediately replaced by another waiting just below the gum line. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you the biggest stories of the day. Our global correspondents report the news objectively and comprehensively, keeping you informed about important world events. International Edition provides analysis from the most seasoned experts around the world to put the day's events into context to better understand what's happening and how it may affect you. Listen to International Edition Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 Universal Time on the Voice of America or your local affiliate. You can also listen to the show on demand by visiting the program page at voanews.com or by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. VOA's International Edition, your go-to source for accurate, comprehensive, and objective news.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell. I've got a wonderful Pan-African playlist of exciting music from 13 different countries. Song of the Week is Ungoni Bwelezera by Lulu from Malawi. Samet Gaida from Diamond FM 93.7 in Tamale, Ghana. He brings us an interview with reggae man Black Rasta.
Black Rasta is a conscious Pan-Africanist, a lecturer, and at the same time a radio presenter.
And my vintage feature is Nyanja xylophone music from 1957. Wow! You can listen while you work, while you drive, or while you do nothing at all but listen. Tune in with me on Music Time in Africa this Saturday and Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
And to AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is James Butty, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.